Fans, the other loss we had this week in the Bay Area, and they called him the voice of God. He's a wonderful man. It was Roy Steele. He was the public address announcer at the Oakland Coliseum going back to 1968. Had an amazing relationship with the fans, with the ball players, and he was a terrific ball player himself. I played softball with Roy Steele and Chester over in Concord. Roy was the second baseman, Chester was the outfielder, and I was the pitcher, first baseman. But Roy Steele was very special to generations of fans from 1968 right up into the mid-2000s for hearing Roy at the ballpark. That voice was unmistakable. And I had a chance to sit down with Roy and talk about his career with the Oakland Athletics and Charlie Finley. And we lost him this week, and again, a tremendous loss for everybody in the Bay Area. One of the sweetest guys around, a good man, Roy Steele. So here's some of my conversation with Roy Steele that I did on our pregame show way back with Roy, talking about how he got the job and a little bit of Charlie Finley, too. Marty Lurie here on a century of athletics baseball with a longtime voice of the Oakland Athletics, and that is Roy Steele. Roy, of course, goes back to the beginning of the franchise here in Oakland in 1968. Roy, tell me how you got involved with the Athletics.
Well, I was a local product for a while because I went to Hayward High, graduated from Hayward High, but I left. I went to college back in Texas. And I came back to the Bay Area because I thought my father was having heart trouble. And the A's came to town in 68, and also Marine World opened in 68. So I was looking for work. I went to Marine World. They hired me to do the water ski show. and then I came over here, and Mr. Finley had given Monty Moore the responsibility of hiring the PA announcer, because I think he and the PA announcer back in Kansas City didn't get along too well. So Monty, I came in and interviewed with Monty, and he didn't know if I could read or talk, but he hired me, gave me the job. There wasn't much of any kind of qualifying. I'm surprised. I walked in it's kind of like the fellow who did the water ski show had been looking for a certain voice all of his years in doing water ski shows, and I was the only one that he had found that it was what he wanted. So maybe the same thing. But anyway, it was a pretty easy buy-in.
Well, one of your first few nights on the job in 1968, May 8th, 1968, Catfish Hunter throws a perfect game.
Yeah, you know, it's hard over all those years to remember everything, but you do remember Rick Mundy's home run over center field, and then Catfish Hunter throwing that perfect game was really a great experience.
Roy, you got to see this young team develop, and of course they turned into world champions. What is it like to be the announcer, to announce a team in a World Series game?
Well, it's thrilling, and you know, we're spoiled. I've been spoiled because the Oakland A's have had such a great record over their 33 years of existence. They've always been exciting, and even when they weren't a winning team, they were still an exciting team. And in all years, that was always fun. But to watch these, what the term then was the unknowns, the known names. You know, Catfish Hunter was not known. Reggie Jackson was kind of known. But we weren't the guys expected to win the big games.
Exciting, though, to see this young team develop. Some of the names that may have been more difficult. I can think of one. Gonzalo Marquez is one that comes to mind quickly. You must have had a couple of tongue twisters over the years.
Well, yeah, and Gonzalo had a great history with it as a pinch hitter. I suppose, you know, if people were into the game, then they remember that Gonzalo Marquez, he came through as a pinch hitter. And, you know, and they were just all individuals like the Pomanian Express. And there are a lot of colorful individuals.
You look back at it, and you can see these dynasties coming about, 70s and the 80s, and, of course, the young team that the Athletics have now. Do you feel a sense of pride in seeing it develop time after time?
Yeah, I do. You know, in some ways, I'm not a fan, and in other ways, I am one of those emotional fans where my day and the emotion of it will be set by whether my team wins or loses, and I hate that, but that's the way it is. You know, like the old Raiders. Back in the 60s, wow, I don't know how many Bay Area people, their day was determined by if the Raiders won or lost over the weekend. Same thing true of the A's. Your emotional setup is kind of determined over whether or not your team won.
A lot of people say that Charlie Finley was a hands-on owner. Did you have contact with him? Did he ever say, hey, Roy, I want you to announce the names a certain way?
What he did, he sat over there in his booth, and he was on the phone to me all the time. Yeah, he had a lot of requests. And there were times when, you know, I would try to dodge them because some of his requests I couldn't bring myself to do. And then he'd have a lot of things that I had to pass on because I was the person sitting by the phone. So, in other words, if he had a criticism of, at that time, you know, we had the organ player. If he had a criticism of the organ player, he told me very bluntly what he wanted to say, and then I had to turn around and try to soften it a little bit for a sensitive musician, you know. That was always, but he was always on the phone, had many messages, wanted me to say things. And one of the first pieces of advice I'd ever gotten was don't read any unwritten copy. In other words, don't go into ad-libbing. And you couldn't do it with him because he'd pick up the phone and say this, blah, 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 hang it. And, boy, I can't remember exactly what he said. And so I'd get caught trying to duplicate what he'd quickly said over the phone.
What are some of the kinds of things that he did want you to say? I can imagine he was one of those owners that meddled into everything.
Well, I can remember, you know, he'd want me to, like our scoreboard one time, it only had three digits, and there was a young rookie who came up and got his first base hit, and it was not a, I've never seen a more nervous rookie, and he got a very weak bloop hit, and so he was one for one. And the scoreboard had 999. And he wanted me to announce, to explain to the people why we didn't have a 1000 batting average for that fella. And I didn't want to call attention, you know, to him or anything. And it just a lot of things like that. And even when it came to the World Series, I used to get paid something, like by NBC or whoever was doing the World Series, but he wanted me to say things in the introduction that none of the networks wanted to be said. He wanted me to include it, and he would tell me, "Who do you work for? You know, who gives you your checks?" So I, on one occasion, I did what he said to do, which was in addition to the national script. I never got another check from anybody.
Roy, the Haas family comes over and buys the team, and they take over, of course, in the beginning of 1981. Billy Martin's already here. What was it like for Billy Martin being around?
Well, Billy was, you know, he was an adventure within himself, and I grew up as a fan of the Oakland Oaks, and Billy Martin, Casey Stengel, Jackie Jensen, those guys were all on the Oakland Oaks teams, and Bud Foster was the old announcer there, and so I was, you know, into Billy Martin, and of course, in his career, you just naturally are a Yankee fan. Regardless, you've got your own local team, but it seems like you are a Yankee fan too, especially back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. That was your national team. So it was very exciting for me to be a part of anything that Billy Martin did. And as a kid growing up in Hayward, Levi's. Wow, you know, that was a big thing, and it's amazing the history of Levi. So I was very, very happy to be a part of the Haas family and the Levi background, too.
The team of 88, 89, and 90 is described sometimes as a more powerful team than the team of the 70s. They had the big guys, the home run hitters. What did you think of those two teams? How would you compare them?
You mean the 70s and then the later 80s? Well, I think that the, you know, we did have Reggie Jackson. But, of course, he missed one whole World Series with the injury. So I have to say with Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire that you did have the more powerful club in that 80s club. The 72, 73, 74, 75 A's were almost like a team of destiny because they were the unknowns. They were not supposed to win. And yet they're the team that came along with the Catfish Hunters and the performances of others who just made them winners, like Raleigh Fingers wasn't known, and relief pitching had just kind of come along. It wasn't as big a thing, of course, as it is now. So all of those colorful characters just brought it together as, you know, as a dream team. And then the later team, again, you had the Dennis Eckersleys and, you know, all of our starting pitcher there, and then the power hitters. So It would have been interesting, and I'm assuming that somebody has done a computerized playoff between those two teams and see how that would come out.
Dennis Eckersley will be a Hall of Famer. Great pitcher. Would close the games. One season, I think he had three walks. Not three walks in the game, but three walks for the whole season. What was it like for you to see something like that night after night?
Well, it really gives you a sense of pride that once you get to your bullpen, in other words, if you can take a game into the ninth inning and you see that Eckersley is out there, it's a real thrill, you know, to know that you're bringing in a guy that is going to stop them. And then when he lost a little near the end, you realized how great those moments were, because those were days when he came in and shut people down with that that sidearm motion which crossed the plate. And then eventually the lefties were able to hit him. But when he was in his prime, well, it was a real thrill to see him come in, because everybody was keyed into it. He became one of the most popular figures in the Bay Area as far as a sports figure, because he was the guy that came in and closed everybody down for him. His records were great.
How does it feel knowing you've been the voice for 33 years now? The fans love you. They love you. They can't wait to hear you. They couldn't come in the park and not hear you. How does that make you feel?
Well, you know, it's surprising sometimes. I don't live with that. That's not a thought foremost in my mind. And then every once in a while, I'll get surprised by, well, I might be traveling like up in Redding, and I might stop by a Little League field, and I hear this little boy going, "Now batting," and I know, well, where's he been? You know, he's been down to Oakland. He's watched the Major League baseball, and that's what he's heard all these years. And then we have a young intern, Mark, who goes to San Francisco State, and he was telling me that he was sitting next to one of his schoolmates, and they said, "Oh, where do you sit?" And he said, "Yeah, I sit next to the scoreboard operator, the PA." And he said, "Oh, the PA, I know that guy." And the guy knew more about me than I can remember about myself, and I wonder why would, but it happens. And then I hear, like, one of the, I think it was Jeff Carter, or he was the Giants PA announcer for a while, and when we had that World Series with San Francisco, we were on a TV show together, and he was telling me that he was a little boy growing up sitting on the stairs over here in Oakland in sound of the stadium, you know. So he grew up, and it's always amazing. It's been 33 years now, so I look at all these people who are 35 and 40 years old, and they, you know, it's a part of their history. It's always full of surprises.
Well, nice to have you on A Century of A's Baseball. When you come to Oakland Athletics history, you are the man, as they say. Roy Steele, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Roy, I'm so glad to have known you. A very special man, and I just can't tell you how much he supported me and was there for me whenever I needed him. So, Roy, we miss you. We love you. Rest in peace. And you and Chester could do that double play combination wherever you are up in heaven, and enjoy yourself. Roy Steele, may you rest in peace. More coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, The Sports Leader.